Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, not your average Star Wars podcast. This is issue number one. I am one of your hosts, John Mills, and with me, as always, is...
I didn't know if you talk first or I talk first. Matthew Rushing.
There you go. And yeah. we are the Jedi Masters. And this is, as we said at the top, Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast. But we're not a news show. We're not a big topics show. We're the ones that look at the nitty-gritty. We're the ones that look at the darker corners and the brighter side of Star Wars and explore some of the issues that they're a little more fun to talk about. So
I'm a little worried, John. Are we going to start looking into, like, you know, the nooks and crannies of Jabba's palace? Because I'm not sure we want to go there.
We're going to look into the entire English muffin of Star Wars, Matt.
Okay.
What we're going to do. And so the issue today is viewing order, a topic that has been hotly debated through the era of just the six films. And now with the seventh film, a debate which I think can easily be resurrected. So with episode seven in the mix, let's go ahead and get the question out there. Somebody sits down with you, they have never seen Star Wars before, and they want to watch all seven movies. What viewing order do you go with?
Well, for me, John, I've put a lot of thought into this, and my thought was, okay, if you're going to get to seven, then probably the best way to go about that for that person, especially if they've never seen Star Wars before, is to go one through seven. And that gives them the opportunity to see the world building happen. And not just that, but I want to go in a completely different way than I think maybe we've gone before with this, John, in any of the mm-hmm. conversations maybe we've had in any of the places online that we are together and stuff like that. But the three trilogies are going to have some interesting thematic elements. And I think once that third trilogy is done, it's really going to flow story order-wise. And my argument is look, the first film trilogy, the prequel trilogy, going in story order, is all about losing a democracy. And that storyline plays so well, you know, historically, you know, with the fall of Rome and things like that, that we can look at. And then we have that dark time era, you know, throughout the Rebels era that we have now. And you get to the original trilogy, and that's all about a small group of rebels fighting against a dictatorship to restore freedom to the galaxy. And so when you think about that, you automatically start to think about things a little bit closer in our history to, you know, like the American Revolution, things like that.
Sure.
And then when we look at this sequel trilogy, we can see that it looks like the story is going to be about trying to keep freedom after you've had it for quite a while. And so when I look at these three trilogies and the way that they're all going to play together, and especially with the story order, it just makes so much sense because it fits so well historically, chronologically, and I think it creates a really nice motif to watch all of these in. And I think what it makes is for a truly relevant series. Because we're watching the progression of Earth history, basically, through the Star Wars films.
Interesting.
And I think that that's a really awesome thing to see, because the more we've read about the ancillary materials and things like that, The Force Awakens, it's a truly relevant film. And what it's talking about. And so putting all these trilogies like that, I'd say that's a really strong argument for showing them in story order. I mean, there's plenty of other arguments for story order, but that was one that's just jumped out at me recently.
You know, I accept that. Like, I get that. And the thing for me is, it all hinges on this idea of if somebody's watching it for the first time, right? And that's sort of what has always spurred the argument about viewing order, is if this is the first time I'm going to show it to them. And so people fall in the category of, I'm going to show them the originals first because I want to present to them the emotional roller coaster that I felt as a kid watching, you know, the big revelation in Empire Strikes Back, and, you know, and Luke's full journey, and preserving that, like the surprises that are in that story arc for Luke as a character, which are no longer surprises when you watch the prequels first. Now, I fall on your side, especially with episode 7 being thrown into the mix, where if it's somebody's first time, I really do think they should start with the prequels. And it's because of the world building that we both, you know, we both love and we both talk about and all of that stuff. I do think that the world building enriches everything that comes after. And I think actually, because I've actually gone through this, because one of the things where I've sort of softened and almost, I guess, flip-flopped in a sense about Force Awakens is saying, oh, world building should have been more world building. And then I realized all of the world building really was done in the prequels. And it's enough momentum that the world building just carries through all the way into the seventh one. There's all, you know, while there are more details that I wish they would have fleshed out or scenes they would have included for different reasons, I get why they felt comfortable letting the momentum from episodes 1 through 3 pass through. Now, so I come down on your side with story order for somebody's first time going through.
Well, I think, John, too, when you think about this idea, and I've heard that. In fact, we were hanging out with family last weekend, and some of the family was making that argument. You know, I want people to have the same experience that I had.
Yeah.
And my thought was, and I said this, I said, you know, just because you had that experience doesn't make it the best experience. And
sure.
Now that we have the films in the order that they are, think about the experience you don't get to have that they have, you know, because
right.
I know friends of mine who have done this recently. They have shown people the films for their first time, and their experience is so much different. It's so vastly different, and it's so cool to see what they're seeing and the things that they're feeling that we never got to feel. And
sure.
Their experience is just as valid as the people who grew up the, you know, the original trilogy. So it's just, I understand we you know, we want to do that thing where we share what we felt, but, you know, at the same time, why take away somebody getting to feel something maybe you didn't, and it's just as cool, and, man, you might feel like you wish you could have felt that.
Yeah, I mean, yes, and I think that's a fair perspective, and there's actually a friend of mine years ago who had never seen the prequels and hadn't seen the original trilogy in years, but still had like childhood memories. And so I showed them in story order, and she actually wound up crying in the Obi-Wan Vader fight in episode 4, because she was like, oh my God, this has so much more depth to it for me now. So like, I you know, that's to speak to your point, but like, outside of the first time through, or the person hasn't seen the originals in many, many years sort of thing, the question becomes more intriguing to me for those of us who have seen it before. So let's remove that first. You know, this is their first time seeing it, and this is you and me sitting down, and we want to look at it from a thematic way. We're going to run, you know, over a couple of days, or one day if we have this much time, a marathon of all the movies. Do you get more, do you ever feel inclined to experiment with it? If you, let's say you're going to watch all 7 movies in a row. Let's say you're doing a 7-day marathon, 1 movie a day. Do you ever get the urge to do sort of a thematic mix up to sort of like move some of the puzzle pieces around? Because, I mean, technically Star Wars is supposed to be designed like the old serials, where it doesn't matter the order you really see them in. It's okay to skip around because the title crawl brings you up to speed enough that you can sort of get into it. And then if you want to go back and you want to see the previous one, or you want to skip ahead, you can, and it's not going to be debilitating for you in terms of understanding the story. So do you ever get that urge to mix it up outside of Story Order for yourself.
I was just thinking about that as you were talking. I was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to do this thing where you watch 1, 4, and 7.
Yeah.
And then you watch 2, 5, and 8.
Yeah.
And then 3, 6, and 9. Like, how cool will that be? I mean, I think that would be a great order where you, because that's where you can start really picking out the pieces and, you know, big thing these days in Star Wars circles is the ring theory. And so
yeah,
really start to play with the films in that way and kind of see the parallels in a whole new light, you know, and especially with 1, 4, and 7, I would think that those parallels would just be jumping off the page, especially with 4 and 7.
Well, I think what would be really interesting, and the thing is, I've actually thought a lot about this. Everybody, you know, this is a sidetrack real quick, but like everybody talks about, you know, oh, you know, 7 is just a redo of 4. And I'm like, you know, 7 actually beyond the halfway point really more closely resembles Return of the Jedi, considering there's a ground force and an air force and a battle of good and evil lightsabers. But taking that aside, what I'm intrigued to do when 7 gets released on Blu-ray, and I've actually been thinking about this too, is I want to watch 3, then 6, then 7. Because I maintain, even outside of all of the ring theory thing, that 7 is really the end of a story arc. It will act as a bridge, so it's the beginning of this trilogy, but there really is the feeling that we're picking up Kylo Ren at his, his Anakin Skywalker moment from episode 3, where he's confronted with the person that he loves and, you know, spoilers, Anakin doesn't kill Obi-Wan, although he wants to, but Kylo becomes a successful bad guy. He does succeed where Darth Vader doesn't, in that he, you know, he takes out his, you know, his Obi-Wan and becomes evil. Anakin Vader fails to take out Obi-Wan but becomes evil, and then Luke becomes the anomaly, because when he's faced with his trial, the killing of the father figure trial, he's the only one that rejects it. So he's the hiccup. And so I think it would be really interesting to watch, you know, 3, 6, 7 and sort of like try to tease out those sort of story elements. You see what I'm saying?
Right. No, because, and I was just thinking this, is that, you know, does that mean, you know, if you watch 3, 6, and 7, do you get the thought that it will be only Luke who helps, you know, redeem somebody? Because will Kylo then be redeemable, and, you know, Rey will have to be the Obi-Wan type character that really does kill the bad guy? So what I'm saying is you get the opportunity to just mix things up a little bit and not just completely go back to, you know, what we did in 6.
Right.
But and do something that we didn't do in 3, which is we do just put an end to the evil.
Okay, so since we're talking viewing order, I would also, the way you're talking of 1, 4, 7, and sort of like line those up, but going back to the 3 and the 7 parallels, like I think it would be interesting to watch, because of the 3 in this, you know, Sith Jedi Awakens, you know, 3-movie marathon here, Vader doesn't kill his father figure, not in 3. Luke doesn't kill his father figure in 6. Are we getting a sign here that Kylo is irredeemable because he does? Is that sort of a parallel we could throw up against it? Like Kylo is irredeemable because he actually carries through with what neither Vader nor Luke could accomplish. Now, I mean, somebody could throw out there, you know, it's like, oh, well, Vader accomplishes it in episode 4. But I'm talking about at their evil points, their decisively evil points. Anakin does some terrible things as Darth Vader. I'm not taking that away from him. But I'm talking about just specifically in terms of the final act of killing the father. Anakin becomes evil without doing it.
Well, and I think speaking to that, you know, Anakin, Vader in episode 4 doesn't just kill Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan also sacrifices himself on purpose.
Oh, that's true. So, know, Vader's act
isn't really responsible
for
Obi-Wan's death. Obi-Wan is responsible for his own death. He willingly leads himself to the slaughter, so to say. I mean, he is, well, he's the Christological figure of that film where he sacrifices himself for the greater good and for, and he'll return.
Sure.
You know, I mean, so Obi-Wan is Jesus. That's what we're seeing.
John.
I know you're an ardent Catholic, my friend, and
I am.
There is a fantastic photo I'm sure you've seen online of the very faithful Catholic woman who her daughter found a picture.
It wasn't Catholic.
It's not Catholic.
Okay. No, it's not Catholic.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, whatever it was funny.
Yeah.
So the Obi-Wan episode 2 looks a lot like Jesus from all the films we get.
What's interesting though, as we're thinking about it, like it would almost be interesting instead of doing full movie marathons, do a marathon just of the lightsaber battles, because every lightsaber battle, even in Sith, where there are tons of them, is like a thematic turning point. And I think it would be interesting if we're talking about like what viewing order and movie marathons and stuff like that is to take out the key lightsaber battles. We're talking saber versus saber, not Jedi cutting up battle droids or clones shooting Jedi or anything like that.
I mean, including the Clone Wars, because there's some really important saber battles in that too. I mean, we're talking like,
man,
Obi-Wan versus Asajj, Obi-Wan and Anakin versus evil Ahsoka. Obi-Wan and Anakin versus Dooku as Palpatine watches. I mean,
I get what you're saying with that. I would say for the sake of this, I would. And this is speaking as somebody who adores the Clone Wars series, I would put the Clone Wars movie into contention. I would throw that one in there and say the battle between Anakin and Dooku in that one is one that I would throw in there, because you could actually juxtapose it directly if you took just that lightsaber battle between Anakin and Dooku there and then throw the one from the beginning of episode 3 in there. And you can see, just by contrasting the two of those, how different a person Anakin is at those two points in his life. So I think that one's a valid one to throw in there. I think opening it up to the whole Clone Wars series for the sake of brevity, I would not do that.
You're right.
So I would keep it movies only. But but you know what? The thing is, I'm guilty of a big sin, and I think you are too, of we both like the Clone Wars movie, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Accept it as part of the lore.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it didn't occur to us to include it in the marathon.
You know, that's true, and I will say this, and please don't take this the wrong way, any listener, because the Clone Wars is one of my favorite things in Star Wars of all time.
Yeah,
I will say that was not meant to be a movie. It was made a movie by corporate decision more than anything else, and so. As much as it is a film, it's a theatrical release, I think I kind of respect it more for its place in the Clone Wars lore than I do necessarily part of the thematic canonical films that we get through the episode order. And
fair.
I will say, on top of that, it is not one of the episodes. It's not an episode
Excellent
one
point.
Or two or three or six or seven. So now... On your point, though, you're right on that. That fight between Dooku and Anakin is a really great lightsaber battle. One and two, it does have a lot to play. So I think it's a valid to say if we're just going through lightsaber battles, if you wanted to pick one from the Clone Wars, that's a great one to pull. It's a good one to watch, and it's also relevant when you're. Putting it with some of those other battles because it has a lot of play, especially with episode 3.
Just quick note for the audience here. This is one of the reasons why Matt and I have started this podcast is these are the types of discussions we love having with each other. And like, I'm going through my head right now. And like, I feel like I've dodged the question at this point, like the question that opened the show, because we've had this wonderful discussion about, you know, 3-6-7 and lightsaber battles and stuff like that. I feel like I've dodged the question up to this point. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to lock in. And I know that this may shock you, but I would actually watch the series as story order, just like Matt, unless I was purposely trying to do something thematic. I think even as a longtime fan and wanting to do, you know, juxtapositions and everything, if I was looking at a 7-day, one movie a day marathon, I'm starting with one and going through seven, because I do think that there is a progression. I also want to test the theory of whether the world building in episodes 1-3 does have the momentum to carry it through, because I believe it does, but I haven't put that to the test yet.
Well, and what's cool about that argument too, John, is that it also even, and funny enough, it strangely plays into the Clone Wars itself, because the Clone Wars was shown out of order in the sense that there were times where they went back and told a story before something. So my wife and I, when I first showed her the show, we went through that chronologically because we were doing a huge chronological rewatch of all of Star Wars. So it was all in order. You know, we're rewatching it again together and we're just pulling out the Blu-rays and popping them in. So we're not worrying about that. And so what's great about Star Wars is you can watch it in so many different ways and get so much out of it when you pull from different places. And, you know, like, you could do thematically, you could do lightsaber battles, you could do, I mean, you could just do character arcs. I mean, even think about the Clone Wars. You could just go through and watch all the important Ahsoka episodes. You could go, you know, all the, you could watch all the important Asajj episodes, or, you know, whatever you wanted to do. Same thing for the films. You know, if you had time, you could break it down and watch all the important Luke scenes or all the important Anakin scenes, 1-6. I mean, if he ever shows up in any of the other films, I mean, we don't know. They had an idea to bring Hayden Christensen back for 7. It was artwork and things that they had actually thought of doing. So who knows?
I'd heard that he would show up in 8, was what I had heard. I know it's a sidebar, but
Force Ghosts. So I'm all for Anakin.
I want him to come back just so that I can watch the fan base just absolutely lose its mind.
Talk about
just validating the prequels in one moment, and just, oh, that would be great. I'd love it.
The mess the theaters would have to clean up after fans just mess themselves because of it and how angry they were.
The heads would be exploding.
All over the place. Thrown in the air.
Yeah.
This sucks. I'm never being a Star Wars fan again.
Yeah, right.
Now, with you, I would watch it story order-wise, because that's where I've found that I've gotten the most out of it, especially recently in the last few years, that when I've watched the films in story order, I'm getting more out of the entire structure of the Star Wars saga, because it is a saga, and as George liked to say, it's a family saga, and you get to see the way that consequences, you know, react throughout the ages, throughout families, and you know, the way the Jedi did things here, are they going to be different here? You know, all of these great elements. It's a flow. It's the flow of history, and it's the flow of the Star Wars history. And I think, you know, would you show anybody Harry Potter 7 before they had seen the rest of them? No. Because it doesn't make any sense. You need 1-7 for it to make sense. Because that story has been building on itself for so many years. Those books have done the same thing. The films did the same thing. And it doesn't really... I mean, just think about that. Any film that's in a series, even just Lord of the Rings, do you take somebody to see The Return of the King who hasn't seen Fellowship and Two Towers? Well, no, because they don't get any of it. It just, it seems like nonsense because they haven't spent the time with the entire story.
Yes. Yes. Though, I mean, the thing is, I would never be in favor of cutting it up the way like Machete Order does, or even the one that's like Machete Order Light, where they still include episode one. Oh, how gracious, guys. But like, if I were to break them up, I would still watch them by trilogy. Even if I watched original trilogy and then 1 through 3 and then 7 through 9, or depending on how 7 through 9 play, 7 through 9, because they haven't done time travel yet. And Rian Johnson loves that. So maybe in episode 8, they're going to time travel. But like, you know, I would still keep
it. Are they going to run into Bruce Willis, who looks more like, you know.
If Joseph Gordon-Levitt shows up as a Jedi, I'm going to be upset. but the, you know what I'm saying, though? Because, like, the thing is, the story arcs move in threes. And so I think that it is such a ridiculous idea, even though, like, I get that it's constructed, you know, like the old serials and you can jump around. Like each set of three is the story arc of a certain set of characters. And so that is the thing where I would view it as the one rule that I would have, is that you have to keep each trilogy intact. I am not one for watching episode 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6. Like that just seems like nonsense to me, you know? Like, it really does.
Yeah, and I was thinking, there was this really great clip online, and somebody had taken the scene of Luke talking to Obi-Wan in his hut, and they cut in scenes from episode 3. So that as they're having the conversation, it's showing you, and especially with the great performance of Alec Guinness, it so fits of what he's thinking about as he tries to figure out what the hell do I say to this boy about his father and the memories he's probably reliving at that moment of one of the probably the worst moment of his life, you know, minus Satine dying in his arms. This is the guy, his father is the one who he believed in, and he took everything from him, his home, his family in the Jedi Order, and his entire reason for existence, which was to protect the Republic. His father's responsible for a bad decision. And so, I you know, that's what you kind of get when you get, when you talk about story order, is that you get those kind of moments. You begin to put yourself in the characters' positions.
Sure.
And you get to relive those memories, and you can understand at that point why Obi-Wan is so cagey about what he says to Luke.
Yes.
You know, it's fantastic, but you only understand that if you've seen episodes 1 through 3 and how worried Obi-Wan is at that point about this boy and protecting enough of the memory of his father until he can bear the weight of this horrible truth that he is going to be told one day.
Yeah. Yes. I think that, you know, just to speak to the friend of mine that I showed, you know, showed it to her 1 through 6, and she, you know, the Obi-Wan Vader fight in episode 4 has so much weight behind it. Once you've watched 1 through 3, like, just, it's like, whoa, there is a lot of history playing. You know, because the first time you see Star Wars, it's just cool. Ooh, bad guy versus good guy, and kind of freaky and scary, and then you get a little more story. But, like, going into it with that weight of, like, yeah, man. Like, I can't move away from story order. I have to stay there.
Well, and what I love, and even with 7, you know, it is the story that is driving everything. When 7 has a very, very, very tight story, and it doesn't really deviate from that. And that's one of the things where we talked about and other places that we are, that we wish it was a little bit more open. But its tight story is wholly dependent on you understanding the prequels and the original trilogy.
True.
I mean, if you don't understand that, you don't understand what it means when they say he has too much Vader in him. Because it's not just Vader, it's also the Anakin part of him that was so angry and that just vengeful teen that everybody hated. It's so intrinsically important for you to understand the background of that story, to really understand the nuance that JJ is adding to the film, because he's using shorthand, because he's expecting you to have seen the rest. And that's where I think the biggest argument for story order comes in, is that this trilogy here, this new sequel trilogy, is wholly dependent on the audience understanding and knowing, you know, the what's come before.
I agree. I think that seven sort of ends the debate for me. I don't think that there's any sort of, I think you're spot on with that. Like I think calling out seven there is the right decision on your part. The right statement or whatever. I'm struggling for the word, obviously, because seven is the one that really does rely on everything that came before. And
And I have to ask you before we leave, John.
Yes.
Real quickly, because do you think that seven works well on its own if you don't kind of understand? I mean, I'm sure people can enjoy the ride because it is a good ride.
Yeah.
But does it really mean much if you don't know Star Wars? Because other than that, if you don't, I feel like it's just kind of a fun action movie.
Well, the thing is that Abrams uses a lot of quick dialogue and softer character moments to convey the sense of history. The only reason, I've really replayed it a lot in my head because I think this is a good question. For me, I don't think it stands completely on its own, but it's because the person who imparts the information about the Force is not somebody who can use it or was once a Jedi or anything like that. When the Force is explained in Episode 4, it's Obi-Wan and it's a quiet, mystical moment. In Episode 1, when we learn more about the midichlorians and the way that the living Force works, you know, the expression of the Force in the physical world and how it ties into the greater energy, it's Qui-Gon imparting that knowledge to us. When we come to Episode 7, Han has a line where he says, yeah, a bunch of mumbo jumbo, but it's true. It's really out there. The dark side, the Jedi, it's all true. And you're left a little bit wanting for explanation on that because that's all that you get. So I think you're right. If you don't have more of an understanding of what the Force is, yeah, it comes clearer at the end that, you know, Rey has powers and, you know, you have the vision with the saber and everything. And Maz talks a bit about it, but I might need to just go back and revisit Episode 7 again, but it doesn't feel as clearly explained as it did in the first chapters of the other two trilogies.
No, I agree with you there, because even specifically in 4, Obi-Wan says, well, the Force is what gives Jedi its power.
Right.
And there is a very vague nature of this power in 7 that has not been defined yet. And part of that is because we haven't really had anybody who completely understands what they're talk about the Force yet to Rey. You know, Maz says, look, I'm no Jedi, but I do know the Force. I kind of know how it works. But Rey hasn't had that character like Luke, obviously, to say, you know, the Force is in all living things, you know, that whole speech that Yoda and Obi-Wan, you know, have given him. And I don't think he's going to go into midichlorians. He doesn't need to at this point. It's not about that. Obviously, we already know Rey is strong in the Force. So I think the conversations that we're going to start having are, oh gosh, right. How do I control myself with the Force? Because, I think Rey's kind of on a precipice
yeah.
At the end of the film of she can go either way. You know, she could give in to her aggression and her anger and kill Kylo in that moment. But, you know, luckily the planet splits and she doesn't get that chance. But there's a moment there. She could go dark side or she could go light. And luckily, worlds explode and keep her from doing that. So, I mean, it's a valid point you make about even the idea of the Force is very nebulous unless you've seen the rest of the films to kind of understand what's going on. So, good point, my friend.
Thank you. Well, I think, you know, this has been a great discussion. And I, you know, this is issue number one. There are many more issues to come. But before we go, Matt, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Well, they can find the show at aggressivenegotiations.squarespace.com. We're on Twitter at The Jedi Masters. Make sure you capitalize The Jedi and Masters, and you'll get us. And just the first letter of each of those. You can email us at aggressivenegotiations@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys to see what you might like us to talk about or your thoughts about what we're talking about. Email us and tell us why we're wrong. Maybe we'll talk about it on the show. We'll have a mailbag episode. What,
wrong?
Yeah, I don't think that could be possible.
Wrong. How do you spell that word? This is the first time I've ever heard it in context of relating to me. I don't know.
I only know how to spell right.
I'll have to look it up. Anyway.
Personally, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I do a couple of podcasts on the Trek FM, actually three on the Trek FM network. I do The Orb with Christopher Jones talking about Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
I do Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We also interview the authors. And if you enjoy John and I talking about Star Wars, and then you want to hear us talk about other amazing geek things, check us out on the 602 Club podcast there on Trek FM. And that's our general geek show there on Trek FM. So I hope you'll join us there.
But 602 John, is a great place to hang out.
It really is. Ruby's fantastic.
Yes, she is.
But before we go, you need to let everybody know where they can find you, because you've got some other things in the hopper as well.
You can find me. My username is Kessel Junkie. You'll find me on Twitter, other places if you look, but Twitter's pretty much where I hang out, smelling up the joint. And you can also find me also on the Trek FM network, co-hosting commentary Trek Stars with Mike Schindler, where we talk about the non-Star Trek work of Star Trek creators. And just to give an example of that, say somebody named J.J. Abrams was directing a Star Trek film. What we would do is we would go and we would look at previous movies that he had directed, watch them and discuss them, and try to glean what is artistically constant in that person's work. And then I'm also in a bit of a madhouse of a podcast called Words with Nerds that I do with my buddy Craig, where, you know, it's it's a forward-thinking show that takes every chance it can. So that's where you guys can find us. But in the meantime, you can find us here at Aggressive Negotiations. And go ahead and hit that subscribe button, because we're going to be coming at you regularly with great topics like today's.